Hello and welcome to the Death of the Roman Republic.
Netflix review of the 2005 HBO original series, Rome. Season 2, Episode 3 of HBO's Rome. These being the words of Marcus Tullius Cicero, one of those lovely long episode names once again. But gosh darn it, did Marcus Tullius Cicero have a lot to say? And Cole taking the lead this episode, what can you tell us about it, my friend?
Well, I can tell you a lot, seeing as I was assigned to summarize the entire episode. It'd be pretty foolish of me to fail in that. So, the episode starts. Varinus has a traumatic flashback about Niobe killing herself. There's a catfight in the brothel. Gaia breaks it up and then makes out with Massius while Polo and literally everyone in the bar watches.
I just wanted to throw this out here because given the circumstances of the current WGA and SAG strike, I really hope that Andrea Varna was actually paid for the archive footage being used in this episode.
Fair enough. I was just going to say
this wouldn't be the pod without BP dating.
dating
when we recorded the episode.
Absolutely.
Indeed, Queen Jacob.
But this episode started with some emotional whiplash. Let me tell you, we get that sad flashback and then, you know, this catfight and Gaia just like making out. And it's crazy. Irene gives Polo a side eye, you know, because he's seeing this go down. And then Gaia slaps Massius, but like in a sexy way. Polo gambles. I think the last time he did this, he wound up with brain damage. Varinus steps out. It gets quiet. Varinus asks for updates about grain shipments. Polo encourages him to relax. Varinus ignores him and says threatening crime boss things. Massius leaves to see to it. Polo seems concerned, but doesn't know how to say it. Varinus and Polo then meet with two men, Memmio and Carbo, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Carbo's nephew was defiled by an Aventine man, and they seek Varinus' permission to kill this man. Varinus clarifies to make sure that the boy was paid for the services rendered. They clarify that he was indeed. The issue is that Carbo was not. He didn't give permission for this instant to occur. So he feels like they kind of gave him the runaround. Varinus says, no, you know, the kid was paid, that I'm not going to let this happen. You're not killing this guy. Polo thinks the man should be punished, but Varinus silences him. And I had a feeling this was going to come up as an issue the second it happened.
Oh, absolutely. Now, so this kid we're talking about, that's gotta be the kid from the last episode, right? That like had all of a 30-second scene.
See, that's like what I originally thought. I guess same. Like that was my first instinct. You later find out no, it's a separate young man.
Yeah, okay. Himself. We see the guy and I thought it wasn't the same person.
Varinus is just so mean to Polo in this episode and
he's deeply troubled.
I know he's deeply troubled, and part of it is he's just, like, letting a lot of this authority go to his head and a lot of other stuff going on because his wife just died, he believes his kids are dead, even though we know as an audience we're not, but Varinus has just turned, like, a complete 180 from last episode to this episode on just being so mean to Polo. I know it was hinted at in the last episode, but still complete 180.
I mean, yeah, Polo is somehow the voice of reason in this episode. But an argument starts to break out between the men. The situation calms, and the men accept Varinus' answer. Surely this won't come up later. Polo is upset Varinus insulted him in front of these men. Varinus is upset that Polo disagreed with him in front of them. Polo storms away, and Gaia gives Varinus a drink. We then cut to Octavia, token up with her friend Jocasta when Adia comes in. Adia brushes off Jocasta and complains about the smell, telling them to do it outside in the future. Adia then grabs a fat one and joins them. Talk about a dream blunt rotation.
This may have been really early on in the episode, but this whole sequence to me is the funniest moment.
Jocasta, the most perfect forehead I've seen in my life. Not a single like speck of complexion error. I mean, that thing was like, whoa, it's like a bowling lane. I don't know. I've never been blown away by a forehead like this before. This is it's like clean, crazy.
I gotta be honest. I wasn't blown away by her forehead, but maybe I didn't give it enough attention.
You got to go back and look at this forehead, man. It's like if God designed a forehead.
They discuss Antony's incoming governorship. Jocasta says Macedonia, the place he's going to be taking over, is ghastly. Adia tells Octavia not to bring home more peasants. She doesn't phrase it like that, but that's what she means.
Mm-hmm.
She's been in a bad mood since Octavian dipped out. Adia meets Timon, then immediately tells him to leave. Never change, Adia.
Oh yeah, Timon like destroys a fruit basket on his way out. That was so great.
Timon is upset, and then Guy has sex with younger Guy, and I was like, okay, I guess this is happening again.
To be clear, Castor, this Adia's slave, has sex with the young prostitute boy who is not the guy's nephew from earlier who yes. prostituted himself. The show gets weird.
So confusing.
Timon's family is happy, and Timon comes in, has a drink, and somehow doesn't kill the happy vibes in the house. We have a quick cut to Varinus's family being all sad about their slavery and whatnot.
And I also, Lydie was there, and I was like, wait, yeah. In episode one, I said Lydie was the one raiding Varinus's possessions. Now I don't really think I know who that is.
I was wondering about that, because I feel like Niobe also had just like a random friend that came over a couple times, so maybe that was
probably her then. Okay, yeah. So I did make a mistake in that episode.
Antony eats with Adia. He came home late due to business, he claims. Adia's all over the scene, and Antony tries to ignore her. She brings up Macedonia. She doesn't want to go. She'd rather stay. Antony says no. After this whole consul thing is over, Macedonia. That's the plan. Adia says he won't be able to fight his enemies. I don't want to fight them anymore. She brings up concerns about Brutus and Cassius. Antony seems to consider. I'm amazed that that was all it took for him to like rearrange his thoughts on this, and also that he somehow had not considered this at any point. Like, it feels weird.
I agree with that. Like, Antony saying he wants to retire to Macedonia, he wants peace, quiet, and a nice rich province he can squeeze. Like, that's the MO of many Roman politicians throughout history, but like, Antony in his current position is like preeminent successor to Caesar politically at the present, and the fact that he legit appears to just want to retire in a couple months forever from politics seems like a real tone shift from where he was last episode. And so Adia Ata-ing, it's a lot of syllables, and convincing him otherwise. I don't know, maybe he's just egging him on a little bit for what was always in his heart, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Although I could see it as like Antony is like definitely struggling. Right. Like, and now he has this very visual opponent in Octavian who, like, if we haven't learned already, we learned very shortly, is like got like parts of the 7th Legion and the 8th Legion to follow him and like 10,000 troops or something like that. Mm-hmm. And like all is not great in the city. You know, there's like the job is rough and the politics are a little messy. And I think honestly, Antony, maybe it's reflective of Antony getting the sense that he's not like the perfect fit for this job, and it's just like it sure would be nice to just retire and quit. But then he's like, oh wait, like someone like, you know, tells him he should fight, he's like, oh yeah, I am big dog, bark bark.
My more thought was like, I was just like, it's weird that Eddie's like, what about Brutus and Cassius, and he's like, what about them, they can't do anything, and she's like, but what if they do something, and he's like, but what if they do something. Antony heads out, and then Timon also heads out and sees his brother speaking with a shady character. His brother notices Timon, pays the man, and sends him on his way. This is probably fine.
One day we'll get payoff for this brother.
Mm-hmm. Timon asks who that was, and his brother suspiciously brushes it off. Pullo and Varinus are eating. Gaia comes in with a screaming man. Those guys from earlier took their revenge. Varinus is pissed.
Not just revenge, literal castration.
Yeah, he's screaming for a justified reason. He has been
molded.
Yeah, it's not, that's Yeah, the man's a eunuch now.
Polo offers to meet with them and try to come up with a compromise. Verena says no and is fully willing to start a gang war over this. Verena blames Polo for all of this because he questioned him in front of these men, making them think, oh, he doesn't have like full control over all this. We can probably get away with this. Polo thinks that everyone in this situation is in the wrong. He's ordered to go deal with them, but he says no. Verena then says he has no use for him and sends someone else to do it. Was this Massius? I couldn't remember.
Probably.
Okay.
It makes me so sad to see our dads fighting.
Mm-hmm. Polo believes this all to be an elaborate method of suicide for Verenus. They all argue about this, and Verenus claims that Polo has never helped him. Polo then points out all of those times that he has helped Verenus and accidentally admits to killing Evander. He then tries to backpedal, but Verenus won't allow it. Polo then explains the whole him finding out about baby Lucius. Verenus is livid that Polo knew and didn't tell him. He yells at Polo to get out.
I must admit, I knew that Verenus was going to find out eventually. I did not expect it to be in this fashion and this early on in the episode. I figured they would have likely saved it for later on conflict between the two of them, but I'm kind of glad that they're doing it now so that we can see what the tension is going to be between them.
BP, you're so succession pilled right now. You're like, I can't believe they did this in the third episode of the season.
Exactly.
It's so that we can see their brotherhood rise from the ashes like a phoenix, stronger than ever before. Hopefully.
See, you guys hope that, yet you all also have consistently said, man, Verenus just keeps finding a new rock bottom. Like, gotta pick a lane, guys.
Antony and Cicero meet. They're discussing the army Octavian is raising in, was it Calpurnia or Campania? I could never actually fully...
Calpurnia is a person, Campania is a place, so yeah.
Okay, thank you. Antony is unconcerned, Cicero is. Antony scares Cicero just to be that guy.
Well, no, yeah, Cicero's getting a little smart with him, and then Antony just aggressively stands up and he recoils. Oh, so good.
He's such a scaredy cat in this scene. I was like, oh my gosh, he's a coward. And then Antony, like 2 seconds later, is like, you're a coward. I'm like, that's what I said.
And then Antony pisses in his plants. I'm sure there's a jar some Roman citizen would have been happy to have for that.
That was a big dog move. Only big dogs whip it out.
See, no, this was my funniest moment of the episode. As I wrote, Antony starts shaking his big dog next to Cicero's face, who then sets down his drink and puts it away. That was my funniest part.
It was an honorable mention for funniest part, but I also put Antony out just brings out the big dog, even though we don't get to see it.
We all wrote down big dog? That's awesome. Love it.
Yeah, but you said it was a big dog moment. Kay and I said, he brings out the big dog.
Well, I wrote in my notes, big dog, question mark.
Is that a sketch?
Yeah, I know.
I gotta be fully honest. In my notes, when this happened, I wrote, big dogs, big hog.
No, you're changing the animals there. That doesn't work. That doesn't work, Cole. Sorry.
But it rhymes. That makes it better. Antony doesn't want Macedonia now. He wants Gaul. Cicero explains why this would be difficult. Antony insists that Cicero bring this up to the Senate. They will listen to him if he does it. Cicero continues to explain his issues. Antony offers a bribe. Cicero denies it. There's only one option left, and Cicero is not pleased about it.
If I may, Cole, I think it's worth pointing out what Cicero, some of his complaints about this is. He says that, you know, Gaul's already going to Decimus, and Decimus is one of Caesar's assassins. Antony, if he was in Gaul, would also be linked up with Caesar's veterans on the border with Rome. So instead of Antony being out in a faraway province of Macedonia, he's right next to Rome with a sizable army that he's pretty familiar with. He was also in Gaul with Caesar for several years previously, of course. So this is like maybe some political concern for Cicero.
Antony threatened Cicero by bringing up Crassus' capture by the Parthians and the rumors about them shoving gold, it was melted gold down his throat, correct?
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
So the legend
Cicero then agrees
to Crassus name drop. That's third time that's happened.
Maybe only the second. I legit maybe thought they never said his name the first time I watched this ever. So
yeah.
Pullo enters Varinus's office and tries to discuss Niobe, but Varinus just doesn't want to talk about anything. Pullo apologizes and Varinus says he forgives him. Pullo is unconvinced. So was I. But Varinus is insistent. He understands. They begin discussing the Carbo issue. Pullo thinks it's better to solve it peacefully with a fine that Carbo has to pay. Varinus says he may be right. That may be the smarter way to do it. Maybe the way to do it with less bloodshed. But it is too late for that option. And the next thing I wrote was just Carbo has a bad time and I chose not to elaborate.
It's fair enough. You did get a great sense of the Roman public toilet situation, which Ooh-wee. Is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote this note just Cole, I didn't buy it either with Varinus saying he forgives Pullo. I also thought about this. This is a very, very strange connection and obviously very different time than now, but this might date the episode again, but I was thinking about the line in Across the Spider-Verse from a couple months ago where Miles Morales is talking to his dad as Spider-Man. He's like, well, men your age are really bad at talking about their mental health. And I think that if Varinus just had a therapist, things would be a lot better for him.
I have a similar quote written down for Brutus. That's so funny. I want to posit a thought here. As I was watching this episode, and specifically this scene where a man gets sodomized over a toilet, I thought, this is very violent. Is this the most violent episode there's been? We've seen a lot of violence, but it feels like, I don't know, there is a lot of just actual fighting in this episode in particular.
I don't want to, this is a very different kind of violence, but the gladiator fight in season one might on some technicality take it, but we've never seen, there's a lot of implied sexual violence in the series. Mm-hmm. This is the most explicit sexual violence mm-hmm. we've seen thus far, certainly, I think.
Mm-hmm.
This episode just has a lot of sexual tension.
You could say that about any episode, though.
Yeah.
This episode specifically.
I don't know who has sexual tension, though, because I'm not sure I agree.
No, it comes up later.
Okay.
Octavia plays the harp. Agrippa shows up with a message from Octavian.
Okay. Actually, okay, sexual tension. Yes, agree. Yeah. I know it's not my job to introduce Agrippa, by the way, but I just have to say, that is a beefcake. What a man.
BP. Yes, immediately after Cole's done with the scene, give us your three words for Agrippa, because that was your job, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
He sees Octavia playing the harp and is entranced. He introduces himself when she notices him. He says that Octavian is well. Octavia has trouble believing that her little brother has become such a powerful and well-known figure. Agrippa says he has an army of 10,000 strong, with men from the 7th and the 8th Legion. Octavia has tried to get him to stop all this, but he will not listen. Agrippa disagrees and believes her to be the only person Octavian actually will listen to. Adia then enters. Octavian wishes them well and asks that they reconsider their prospects for the future. Adia is annoyed. Agrippa is to meet with others on Octavian's behalf, but cannot and will not elaborate as to who those people are and what the purpose is. Adia asks if Antony knows he is here. He does not. Adia calls Agrippa a traitor, mortifying Octavia. She also calls Octavian a traitor, but Agrippa is the one to whose face she's saying it. Adia tells him to tell Octavian nothing at all, and Agrippa leaves. Adia sends a slave to tell Antony of Agrippa's presence and says that she has no son.
Okay, yep, right here, 28:25.
I figured.
Just a reminder, it's been a while since we recorded. Moments that mm-hmm. I wish Adia would die.
Yes, yes. BP, why don't you go ahead and hit us though with this young man Agrippa who's been introduced into our lives.
I think that Marcus Agrippa, there's a lot you could say about him. And one of the few kind things that you can say about a character on Rome, in my opinion. I genuinely think that this guy just seems really humble. He doesn't seem like he really wants power to go to people's head. He wants to support, but he also seems pretty level-headed and humble enough to know right and wrong. Speaking of knowing right and wrong, I think that he seems very moral and he seems very trustworthy because he is not sticking to it whenever Adia is trying to get out of him, like who he's meeting with.
None of these were the words that came to mind for me.
Time will tell.
Jacob, but... I'm curious to hear your words later on then. Okay, okay. Don't want to forget that. Cole, why don't you pick back up with the narrative though?
That young guy from earlier is eating in the kitchen and seems to have a thing going on with a female slave. The young guy leaves suspiciously. Turns out, he works for Servilia. His name is Duro. He is supposed to kill Adia. He can have it done tomorrow if Servilia is all right with Octavia also dying. Servilia is not fine with that. Some remnant of affection for Octavia, perhaps?
I love that this is the payoff for what that little scene in the previous episode, and to know that it was all a ruse is really strong writing from a creative standpoint for them.
I think I've pieced it together. Wait.
Yeah, that random sex scene from last episode was Duro.
Okay. Oh.
To say it explicitly, Duro has always been was paid by Servilia to kill Adia, and he prostituted himself to one of Adia's slaves to get inside her household, get confidence, hangs out in the kitchen, stuff like that.
Okay. Then I do understand that. Okay.
He wants to be paid more because the job is taking longer. Servilia agrees. Duro also demands a kiss from Servilia. I then wrote, who does this guy think he is?
He thinks he's Allie's manager in A Star Is Born.
she acquiesces and gives him the kiss. I really didn't think she was going to. I thought she was going to slap the crap out of him.
Hey, this dude has so much like swagger for like, you know... Coming onto the show in not a position of traditional strength, the dude is supremely confident in what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We cut to Bithynia with Brutus and Cassius trying to secure help to take down Antony. Well, Cassius is trying to get help to take down Antony. Brutus is really drunk and in a mood. The king... wants to see a woman have sex with a baboon. I just wrote okay with several question marks.
This is hilarious. This is yep. The funniest part of the episode. It's so good.
Same. I was just like, what? It was just so out of nowhere. I was not prepared at all.
What's Brutus's friend's name again?
Cassius.
Yeah, oh, yes, duh, yes, Cassius. Yeah, Cassius is just trying to, like, talk to this guy to earn political favor, and just all of a sudden he's like, there are women in Rome who get by baboons. And Cassius is like, yeah, I guess that happens. But anyway, here's all this other stuff. He's like, it would be marvelous.
And I just love Cassius' response to saying arrangements can be made.
It's super weird. Brutus is drunkenly rambling about his family and killing Caesar. He is called a coward and is enraged and tries to fight the guy. Cassius intervenes and drags Brutus out.
Question for Kay. Brutus is currently serving a governorship, right? Or he's governor someplace?
Gosh, in the narrative of the show, I don't really think so. Because like in the narrative of the show, he was like ran... out of Rome after the funeral because it went so poorly for him. In real life history, Brutus and Cassius were legit governors by this point, but I think in the name of the show, they don't have any formal power.
regardless, I wrote down, men would rather take a governorship in Turkey than go to therapy.
I wrote down during the scene, I love the contrast on an outsider's perspective on the Ides of March, and how even though Brutus was the one organizing it, the idea that he was the last one to give the stab could be seen as cowardly.
Also, I think it's kind of interesting that they're talking about, like, yeah, you were like the last one to do it, so you like stabbed an already dead guy. Cassius drags Brutus out. Brutus demands to be left alone, and Cassius obliges. Brutus apologizes as he leaves and has an angry, just emotional moment to himself.
I wrote down, it's giving Polo and Varinus.
It is. Whoa.
Our old friend Parallels is back.
Adia, drunk and crying in the bath. Already candidate for favorite scene. Look, I love seeing this woman miserable, okay? Antony joins. She asks about Agrippa, but Antony doesn't care. Agrippa wants an alliance with Cicero, but will be refused because of Antony's threat. At Adia's request, Antony swears not to harm Octavian. It seems like she does care about that guy that's not her son anymore.
Is anyone else getting the sense that the only family time in this household is when Mark Antony and Adia are bathing together?
Lydie is trying to get the Varinus family out of their cage. Lydie manages to get out, but the children are caught and Lydie runs away. Irene asks Gaia for some help while she's carrying some stuff around the bar. Gaia rudely refuses. Irene finds an upside-down dead guy. She's having a rough night, it seems. Varinus is certain it's Memmio's work.
To be clear, it's the guy who sexually assaulted Carbo in the incident earlier who was killed. And yeah, it's a pretty good guess that this was, you know, Memmio's work.
Mm-hmm. Varinus intends more violence. Polo is upset. He and Varinus argue about who Varinus has become. Varinus accuses him of sleeping with Niobe.
Insane and unhinged.
He demands the truth, and Polo says, I'll tell you the truth, but you're not going to believe me. And he's like, I'll believe the truth,
is what he says.
Yeah, he's like, Polo's like, I swear I didn't sleep with her. And he's like, I don't believe you. Like, immediately it's like, okay.
it's not often that we get sassy Varinus, but like when he says a demon has possessed me, man, few and far between. Silly Varinus is best Varinus though.
Also, just like, he doesn't just like say I didn't sleep with your wife, he says I swear on the bones of my mother.
Yeah, big deal.
I think I remember Polo liked his mom a lot. I was a big fan of her.
Definitely.
Polo, in anger, lies and says he did sleep with her, along with basically everyone that lived in Varinus Square, every time Varinus so much as turned around. The fight turns physical, and they end up throwing themselves out the window and down onto the first floor of the bar. Irene helps Polo up. Gaia tries the same to Varinus, but he tells her not to touch him. Varinus then kind of just huddles up into a ball and cries on the ground. Rock bottom again. Polo and Irene leave, unsure of where to go, but not wanting to stay. Scruffy Brutus rides a horse.
He's looking bad.
Yeah, it's a rough spot he's in. He gets off the horse and takes his clothes off and steps into the water.
Kendall
Roy. We see a lot.
I was not ready.
Yeah.
How much Brutus is schlanging around down there.
It's the Rome bingo list. I don't think seeing Brutus get naked into a river was on anyone's bingo chart.
I mean, I could have seen maybe like Brutus gets naked, because I feel like most characters in the show do that. I wasn't expecting us to see everything.
And we show it. We show all.
Show it all.
But not Mark Antony's.
Have we not?
No. Just butt.
No, in season one.
Is he really? I don't know. I gotta go back.
He said with a sly, knowing smile.
Jacob's like, I swear I'll believe you if you tell the truth. He's like, just speaks out. Jacob's like, I don't believe you.
And my note on this is to pay attention. because hi, I'm Jacob Yelovich dash O'Connor, reporting on God news in Rome this season, and they're consistent. That's all I'm going to say. These gods, they're doing their work.
Cicero goes somewhere. I think we get a little more information on that later, but at the time of writing this, I wasn't clear where he was going.
Right. Well,
Antony goes to the...
As soon as, like, Mark Antony realizes that Cicero is not there, I got, like, internally so hyped because, like, Cicero has been such a little baby and, like, two-faced and trying to play both sides and just, like, not having a backbone. And it's like, finally, Cicero made a play. This is a very deliberate thing he is doing by not being there. And then they start reading, which we'll talk about. Mm-hmm. And you're like, he swung and he hit a grand slam. That bad boy's out to park.
Antony is concerned by Cicero's absence, as he needs him for this whole governor of Gaul thing. Cicero sets a speech ahead to be read. The speech starts out well enough, thanking Antony for his service to the city. But then Cicero dunks on Antony, the hardest Antony has ever been dunked on.
And the reader's getting, like, nervous, and he wants to stop talking. Mm-hmm. Antony's like, go on.
And it's like, I forget the exact phrasing. It's like, I wish I could say you've, like, done the city a service and been a great man, but the truth is you've been, like, a drunken, like, sex-addled, like, rot to the city. It's something to that effect.
Mm-hmm. The best line... for me that I wrote down, Cicero, through the messenger, calls Antony Rome's Helen of Troy. He wants to stop. Go on, says Antony. A woman's role has always best suited you. And Antony kills a man with his bare hands.
Yeah.
I know that it doesn't end in, like, this major, like, coup, but to me, this is Antony's kind of equivalent to the Ides of March, almost, where he just gets everything, like, said about him thrown to him, and he's not having it.
Yeah, senators leave. Antony is left shaking, not having gotten what he wanted, and insulted.
Like, yeah, I wrote, people are leaving. I put, Antony is livid, and I put livid in all capitals, and I underlined it, like, four times, because I think this is the single angriest moment we've had from him. Like, he's literally just, like, shaking with rage.
I really love this moment because I like just the empty Senate chambers with, like, Antony standing over this innocent man he just murdered for literally killed the messenger. And it's this great visual representation, this empty Senate room. And it's like, it just kind of feels like right here that Antony is just, like, lost. Like, he is not this great political force. He is losing to the people who are far greater and have been in this game for a longer time. And it's just,
it belongs on the battlefield, moment. Not the Senate floor, I think. Mm-hmm.
And that's when he turned to the camera and said, I'm going to become the Joker.
I'm the Joker, baby.
Was this everyone's favorite scene? Just checking, because it was mine.
Yes. We'll get
to that later. It was mine, yes.
Yes. I'm not going to make it my favorite scene because the rest of you guys are going to talk about it. Boom.
Well, I can't talk about it now because, Jacob, you took a lot of the points I wanted to talk about. Now I'm upset. Now I got to think of favorite scene.
I get the best of both worlds. Call me Hannah Cyrus, Miley Montana.
Cicero is now Team Octavian. 3 months go by. Antony
time
is
skip.
No
we love a time skip.
Yep. Antony is no longer in Rome. He sieges a city in Gaul. Octavian joins the opposing army.
This is all delivered to us via the
newsreader, yes.
The newsreader, who is quickly becoming my favorite character, because boy, does he deliver again. Oh my gosh.
Gives 110% every second.
Yeah. But from this, it kind of felt like Octavian and his forces were kind of accepted as, like, the true Roman, like, forces. They're fighting for the causes of Rome, and Antony's people were, like, rebellious, right?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is a very quick shift, but, like, makes sense for what we just witnessed.
I mean, we said this in season one, right? Like, the newsreader is a good barometer of the political mood in Rome and who might have the levers of power at that present moment and how he portrays the news.
Absolutely, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a question that I do have for UK in regards to this time jump. Was Rome canceled while season two was filming, and that's why they started just doing all these massive time jumps, or was it before production on season two began?
I think I could be wrong. I think they were writing out season two, and the original plan was for Rome to be five seasons. They were writing season two. In the process of writing, they are told this is also your last season. So some stuff is paced, I think, to, you know, pace out for a longer stretch. And then later on, time skips become more and more necessary to wrap up the narrative they want to wrap up.
Polo has returned because he wants to fix things with Verena still.
Not only does he want to fix things, the gods told him that this is what he must do. So,
yes.
And will listening to the gods work out this time? Let's see. Will he find Verena in Rome? Will he? Oh, must he?
It's tough to say. Polo intends for them to leave after they reconcile. They find the bar destroyed.
Yeah, burnt to shambles.
I was just frustrated. Like, it looked like the smoke was still rising. So I was like, did this happen like 20 minutes ago?
No, I totally agree.
But Polo speaks with Massius and discovers that Varinus has left with Antony and left Massius in charge. Gang war problems have gotten worse. Polo wants to leave a letter for Varinus and get out of Italy because war is coming. Lighty shows up. She and Polo are surprised and ecstatic to meet. She tells him that the children are alive. Polo then rides off heroically.
This is crazy. This is crazy, right? Because Polo's like, they sits down and Irene's like, what are we going to do now? He's like, I don't know. I don't know why the gods told me to go here and go back there to find Verena. She's just not here. I don't know what to do. And then boom, Lighty's right there. She's like, oh, guess what? The kids are alive. And guess what? Oh, that's big time God moves, baby. God be putting Polo in the right place, right times. God never lies. This is how Polo wins. This is how my dads get back together and are happy again. It's simple. Polo gets the kids, brings them to Varinus, and all is happy and well in Rome.
Amen.
Polo's like, prayer warriors, hear me. Adia sits at her dinner table alone. Octavia is out with Jocasta. She then decides she'll just have dinner by herself. Duro poisons the stew while he distracts the kitchen slave. Adia turns down the initial unpoisoned food when it is brought to her, and when the stew is mentioned, she's like, yeah, give me that. So she turns down the safe stuff and asks for the poison food. And then the final word I have for my summary is, welp, as the episode closes.
Cliffhanger. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. They're going to kill her. They're going to kill her.
We're not that lucky, I think.
They're
going to
kill her.
All right, guys. Cole, thank you very much for taking point on summarizing the episode. Before we get to our fave, maybe least fave moments of the episode, we'll go ahead and get into our breakout rooms for some separate discussion here. The topic for Cole and BP at the present. And I will say, I don't know, I feel like I have a lot to talk about with Jacob in terms of history of this episode. So if you guys just want to bring other theories to it besides these two questions I'm going to ask, then you guys can. My big question for Cole and BP, do you think Adia is going to eat the poison stew? Second question being implied, what is the fallout of that? And third, Octavian is apparently going to war against Antony and Gaul. Polo thinks civil war will once again be upon Italy. Polo is also racing there himself to get to Varinus. What do you think the outcome may be here? We have several principal characters, Varinus, Antony, Octavian, Polo, all going to the same place. And Adia, whether she lives, is severely injured, or dies, could severely affect what Octavian and Antony proceed to do. I'm just curious, with all of these factors brewing at the end of the episode, what might occur? Alrighty here, in terms of talking about the history stuff this episode, do you want to start? I honestly took a heck of a ton of notes, I feel like.
Truth be told, I kind of forgot to pay attention to the history this episode at all. There was so much going on, and it's been a long week, and so you can knock it out of the park here.
No problem, man. I did have a biology question for you at the end as well, for your opinion, but okay. So I thought it was funny earlier on that Adia and Jocasta were kind of dunking on Macedonia, like that was going to be Adia's, I don't know, maybe forever home if Antony got his initial plan, basically. And yeah. So I think it's worth talking about maybe what the Romans could have been thinking about Macedonia at this time. So Macedonia, it's just north of Greece, and Greece is a culture very much admired by the Romans throughout history. They famously copied a lot of their style and drip and stuff. The Macedonians to the north, though, are a bit of a different breed, and sometimes they get lumped in together with the Greeks as well, but like the Macedonians specifically are the ones that produced like Alexander the Great. And they're also known as a group of more unruly people. Like the Macedonians were known to be really good hunters. They also were really big partiers, maybe arguably more than the Greeks, because Macedonian wine in the ancient world was not diluted. Like the Greeks like took wine, diluted it with water, got drunk off of that. The Macedonians drank it straight from the tap, which is why they have this maybe more wild reputation and makes it a little maybe less sexy of a place to live than, say, compared to Greece or even Gaul, I guess, even if Gaul's more political value for the both of them. We got Octavian raising troops. That was something that was going on. Crassus gets shouted out, mentioned with molten gold being poured down his throat, as according to legend there. And one thing I definitely want to talk about here is that maybe the best thing that this series does and executes on. And okay, I should say here, Jacob, what are your three words to describe Marcus Vipsanius Agrippa?
I mean, in this scene, it's kind of just beefcake, himbo, and... what was the other one? I can't remember. But yeah, you just, yeah, jock. I don't know. Maybe. I'm not sure.
Okay. See, for me, and maybe I have the hindsight of knowing the last eight episodes or whatever we're going to watch, the best thing that HBO's Rome ever did is making Marcus Vipsanius Agrippa like just the biggest soft boy in the series. Like he comes on the screen, I'm like, oh, my guy, he's not toxic. They make one of Rome's most successful warlords of all time, just like the nicest guy. I think like maybe the first thing he says is that he's entranced by Octavia playing a harp, who we know is like not doing well at all for a variety of things in her life. Like, dear Lord, I'm just I'm really looking forward to how Agrippa is portrayed in this, because I think it's just very funny. Let's see. Cicero insults Antony in his speech, obviously, but one of his insults was that Antony impressively was bankrupt before even coming of age. And this is historically accurate.
I remember that. Yeah, I remember him saying that, and I was wondering about that. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned it.
Yeah, because as a young man, Antony's father got killed by pirates, if I remember correctly. And so at a fairly young age, became the head of his household and then squandered what relatively little money his family had by partying. He still, you know, obviously turned out fairly well, all things considered. But I don't know, that's a legit accusation. And this is like Cicero's Philippics against Antony, the Philippics being the famous speeches admonishing him. And I think in real life history, there was like a dozen, 14 or so of these.
Wow.
Antony lays siege at Mutina to Brutus's cousin and conspirator Decimus Brutus, where the consuls Pansa and Hirtius are coming for him, along with Octavian. That's what the newsreader's talking about. We know this, Jacob, that Octavian's gonna like jackpot this because his fellow Republican consuls are going to die in this, and then Octavian's gonna take charge of their armies.
Yeah.
And the last point I think I had here is that Brutus praying to the god Janus in the river. One, it's a, I don't know, one of those good rebirth tropes, go to a river to be reborn. And Janus is the Roman god of new beginnings. He's the god with two faces. I think, I mean, heck, isn't that the same god that Verinus was praying to when he was starting his new business?
I was going to say, this is not the first time we've heard Janus's name.
Okay,
no.
Okay, yeah. And bit of trivia, Jacob, do you know one of the god Janus's legacy in our common English parlance today? You might consider the Roman influence on months.
Oh, well, then it would, it'd be January if it's new beginnings.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. I'm glad you gave me that hint, because I was about to embarrass myself and say jaundice.
Because it's a new beginning. That's bad.
Yeah.
My question for you that has to do with biology. If you put, this isn't a real biology question. If you put poison while soup is boiling, would it be rendered inert, do you think?
It's gonna decrease the potency, I would imagine. Like, it depends, like, obviously on the poison and like the boiling point of the poison in particular, and like how it's dissolving or being dissolved by the food or the solvent or whatever. Yeah, boiling it is typically not a smart move. You're gonna boil off it if it's like, you know, a lower boiling point than the thing that's already burning or whatever. So
okay,
an interesting choice. Probably it's probably added so fast and then served, it probably didn't matter, I would think.
Yeah,
or at least marginally.
But, do you actually think Addy's gonna be killed off?
I hope. I don't know what's gonna happen. I'm gonna say no. I don't.
I don't. I mean, you know, with hindsight, dude, like, DOTR, Adia is not a character that comes up a lot. So, you know, she functionally, you know, in real history, exactly, doesn't necessarily have a lot to do here. But you think she's going to survive?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. Fellas, maybe one of you can take each of these. I guess first question, is Adia going to eat the poison soup? And if so, is she going to wholly die? Is she going to get injured? Is it not going to happen? What do we think there? I'll let one of you take that one.
We do not think Adia is going to die. I feel like it's a little too soon for that to take place. We've got more time to build towards something like that if it happens.
Okay.
BP thinks that maybe she'll have the slave like taste test the food in case there's something nefarious. I was wondering if maybe, because I was kind of worried this was going to happen, that she was just going to like try some of the food on her own, like while she was taking it, but that didn't happen.
It was all
sorry. Who is she in that sentence?
Sorry, the kitchen slave.
Okay, so the slave transporting it to her after Dura poisons it might sample some. Okay, but we didn't see that again.
Yes.
Okay, gotcha. BP then, how do you think that this whole Octavian versus Antony, as Varinus, or as Polo's flying to Varinus, what might some outcomes be of this?
Well, what we discussed was that Varinus and Polo are going to band together to save Varinus's children. And we think that it's going to be resolved within the end of the episode for next week. And then it ends the Octavian and Antony feud. We kind of had different thoughts on this. I think it's going to end with Octavian being victorious over Antony. And I know from basic history that Mark Antony and Cleopatra had an affair. And I think that his defeat is what gets him going to Egypt and hiding out there and having his affair with Cleopatra, and Octavian takes control. Cole thinks that Antony, being more of a military strategist, will come out on top in battle, but Octavian will figure out a way to overcome him with political wits. Antony is not very good at taking advice, especially politically, when it is given to him, and he just kind of dismisses it all, not thinking about it in the long term.
Okay. Well, sounds good there, guys. We'll go ahead and break down any least favorite shoutouts of the episode or favorite shoutouts. Now, I will say, I think at least three of us had the same favorite moment, which you can share if you want to, although much has already been said. So if you'd like to maybe change your favorite moment and be thinking on the fly, you're more than welcome to. And in that instance, to give people some space to be thinking, does anybody want to share a least favorite thing that they had from the episode?
I do. My least favorite scene of this episode was the scene with Duro and Servilia, because as much as I respect that dude's confidence, I'm like, who do you think you are? You just showed up to the show like an episode ago in not a dominant position, and you're here acting like the main character. Get out of here. I also thought it was weird that Servilia actually kissed him. I feel like she would not do that.
It just goes to show how much that she wants Atia dead, though.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Strong character moment. And you know what? I'd do the same. I'd kiss that boy.
Under duress, or?
Under duress.
I said what I said.
My least favorite scene is the assault scene. And it was because I know that it obviously is building tension for what is going on in that storyline. It was just felt very out of nowhere and felt very just jarring to be kind of thrown into that very randomly. I'm not saying it's not unfitting, narratively speaking.
You know what I will say? Rome has done a pretty consistent job of being jarring. Like, we've had many, many scenes like this where you're like, whoa, hey, whoa, easy there, partner. Like, this one's more, you know, affects the plot in a more direct way, I think. But, like, when Servilia is, like, you know, pulled from her cart and stripped naked in the streets and, like, almost killed and, like, her hair is cut. There's, like, this, I think in, like, maybe the first episode or so of the entire show, like, Octavia being forced to be with
Poppy.
Yes. And
second least favorite moment of the show for me.
Yeah. So it does, you know, it's no stranger to being jarring and just doing those things. So
that's why I said it.
Yeah, that's not to say you're not justified in having it be your least favorite moment, but I'm just noticing a trend.
That's why I brought up saying, and you said it, that this one has more of a consequence to the narrative. And that's why I said I get why it's here.
I mean, this kind of reveals character because, I mean, Varinus ordered this to be done. So it's like, this is like what Varinus, our golden boy, previously wants. Like,
And, you know, I kind of knew that something violent was about to happen. You know, we saw this character we've seen a couple times now who we know is involved with, like, this Varinus plot. And he's sitting down and people are clearing out when he enters anyway. And I was like, I knew violence was about to happen. I just didn't know how it was going to go down.
Yeah, I kind of thought they were just going to kill him.
Yeah.
Jacob, did you have a least favorite moment of the episode?
Nope.
All right. Then we'll go ahead and move on to favorite moments of the episode. I'll just go ahead and power through and describe why I think the Philippics or Antony getting put on blast by the messenger is my favorite moment. I'm going to summarize a lot of what's been said already. And I think we said this in so many words already. This is the first explicit L that Antony took solely on his own. Like, yeah, Ides of March did not go well for him. But, like, this is, like, just everything aimed squarely at Antony, who has stepped up, and the cumulative actions throughout his life, gallivanting across the Roman world with Caesar, swaggering and sleeping his way into several bedrooms, urinating inches from Cicero's face, squandering his fortune as a young man, his debaucherous lifestyle of little or no consequence that he has very happily led thus far is for the first time catching up with him. And someone has stood up to him, and Antony shows his true colors by murdering the messenger.
All right, I will go next. You know, you've said your piece on that. We've all kind of said everything's on it. I did write down in my notes, "Big Dog Cicero."
Oh, yes, sir.
I feel like it. Even if he doesn't like he doesn't keep the title. I feel like he earned it there.
Oh yeah, like, absolutely.
The big dog was taken down by a bigger dog we did not even know about.
Mm-hmm.
Another scene I'm willing to talk about, unless it's something someone else wants to talk about, was the scene with Brutus where he kind of has his come to Jesus moment.
I was going to put as my favorite moment for this episode, since we had already talked about the moment in the Senate chambers with Mark Antony. What I really like about this moment, it's the moment where it's the first scene with Brutus, and it's with Cassius and everyone in Turkey. You can still see the conflict that Brutus really has for what he had done and is still having to live with that. And I remember in the very first episode, one of the words I described Brutus as was conflicted. You could just tell every decision that he makes, he still thinks about even after it's done. And I think that's something that's remained so consistent with him throughout this entire series, that one decision after another, he questions, did I make the right decision? What could I have done differently? Even if he doesn't outright say it, it's really well executed, in my opinion. And I think that Brutus is arguably one of the more underrated characters on the show, personally. And I also do like that it does kind of mirror Varinus a little bit and what he's going through. Varinus has a lot of guilt right now and a lot of frustration.
Jacob, favorite moment?
Yes, I have a favorite moment. This, I feel like this is a theme I've talked about many times. Like maybe even like last episode, I had a favorite moment that was similar to this. I just think that the acting from Pullo and Varinus is so consistently amazing. When Varinus and Pullo are like having their big fight, and they come falling through like the upstairs, out the wall and onto the floor, and Varinus is just lying there kind of, you know, and his first immediate reaction is like to find like a candlestick to like hit Pullo with, but then he falls back into the ground like in pain. And what's her name? It's not Gaius, it's
Irini?
Gaia. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She goes to like touch him and help him. And he just like says in this like, it's so well delivered, the line. It just says, "Don't touch me." But like it's very low register, and it's like sounds and feels broken as it comes out. And once again, like Varinus is at rock bottom, and it's very emblematic of that. And I just, every time I'm like, this guy, he's doing it. So that was my favorite part. I love that. I was like, that's just it ripped my heart out. It rips my heart out. Let me be clear. It makes me so sad. But boy, oh boy, good stuff.
All right. Well said here, gentlemen. Tune in to Death of the Roman Republic Reviews HBO's Rome next episode, season 2, episode 4, Testudo et Lepus, or The Tortoise and the Hare, when translated from Latin. Our boy Jacob is going to be taking point on that episode, because with animal names in the title, who else should it go to? But you can, if you want to engage with the show, leave a rating on Apple Podcasts. And my fellow hosts, anything you guys want to promote in your lives?
Did Cole say his favorite scene?
Yeah, it was you went over the speech again, and then we're going to go over the Brutus nude scene, but then BP wanted to talk about that.
Okay, I didn't know if he was going
to. Cole, did you have anything else you wanted to say, though?
No, my initial favorite scene was the Cicero scene, but you covered that. My backup favorite was the Brutus scene. BP wanted to talk about that. My backup was the Varinus thing, so I'm just going to take the L.
This is just like the Ides of March.
Everyone's turned against me.
Well, in that case, hello, I'm Jacob. I'll plug myself. My name is Jacob. If you haven't heard, my name is Jacob. I'll be your host next episode. I'll see you next episode, next week. You'll hear my voice more. You can follow me on Twitter at SoupCatFishYOLO. I'm doing good in life. Life is up. That's all I got.
Nice.
You can follow me on Twitter at BP Movie Review Hour, and I also will have a Threads account with that for that for my podcast up sometime, maybe, I don't know. And yeah, and follow me on Letterboxd, BP Movie Review Hour. This week is Barbenheimer week, so you will see my full reviews on those
at some point in the future when this comes out.
Indeed. I don't have anything to promote right now, but we'll see where the next week takes us.
Cool, can you promote my Twitter? Promote again? Your health this week and stay healthy. I don't know.
Yeah. Hey, everyone. Eat well. Drink water. If you feel very unwell, go to the hospital. But friends, Romans, countrymen, I hope you enjoy the show.
80% correct. All right, we'll call it.
What did I mess up, man?
The prelude. With that being said, friends, Romans, countrymen.
Oh.